Spirit Blade Underground, February 18th, 2011.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, February 18, 2011.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I'm Peter France and the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. All right, let's get into updates.
File access. Update.
Well, I wasn't sure if I was going to even be able to do a podcast this week because the shows lately have gone way over my allotted storage space with my Libsyn hosting program. So I was a little bit nervous, but the queue kind of rotated and I got some server space freed up just in the nick of time. I've been over capacity too lately in my head. And my schedule, and I've fallen behind in some of the stuff I really wanted to include in the podcast this week. Bummer, but you know, I could it could be a shorter podcast and not be a bad thing for a few weeks. So I've been experiencing a surge of other work. Some of you guys know that I do substitute teaching a little bit, about 1/4 of my time on the side, and that's kept me out of the office in kind of a surge of busyness lately. So I've been doing about all I can just to keep up with my usual activities, you know, blogging, day-to-day emails, and form activity, the stuff that I kind of feel like I have to do. So, you know, things likely don't seem different to you guys, but I'm hanging on by the skin of my teeth and have not been able to do anything else to move Spirit Blade Productions forward or expand anything. And, oh, that's tough because I want to move, I want to grow, I want to get things going, you know, all that stuff. But anyway, thankfully, I've been able to make just a little bit of time to keep up with the Special Features monthly release schedule. We have the Special Features at spiritblade.net/freestuff, if you haven't been there before. I should be releasing part one of Randy Hessen's recording session video next week, which I think you guys are going to enjoy. Randy Hessen, of course, the voice of Vincent Kraft in the Spirit Blade trilogy and Vanger in the Pilgrim's Progress series. All right, well, on the show today, I've got a review for you of IM number 4 that might save you some money, and a continuing look as well at Romans chapter 7 that's going to tell us more about the internal struggle that every Christian either has to face or, I think, live in denial of. All right, let's get to it.
Primary features. Activated.
Well, if you're listening to this, I want you to have no doubt of my sincere love for you. It is for you, the listener, that I willingly subject myself to movies like I Am Number 4, based on the best-selling young adult novel by Pittacus Lore, which I've not read. I'm not even sure if that's how you pronounce the name. It's a pseudonym anyway. The story centers on a high school boy who is played, of course, by a college-age man, Alex Pettifer, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's on the run with an older man who protects and guides him, kind of a father figure. They are both aliens from the planet Lorien. John, the alien boy's human cover, is one of 9 children from the planet Lorien who are in hiding on Earth from the evil Mogadorians who wish to kill them, simply because Mogadorians are bad aliens, and that is the kind of thing they do. Really, that's about it for the explanation there. Most of this is explained also after the first 5 minutes of the movie in a bit of voiceover exposition that steals any mystery that might have pulled me in and sets the tone for the rest of the movie. And this tone can be summed up with the word simplistic. I don't know how old the characters are in the book, but it seemed to me that this story should have either been told using characters 4 years younger, you know, junior high or maybe tweens, or should have been more clearly marketed as being based on the young adult novel. Either would have been a great tip-off that this movie was written for younger sensibilities than mine. As it was, the Twilight vibe I got from the trailers wasn't quite strong enough to ward me off, and I bought my ticket with reserved hopes for a cool, serious sci-fi fantasy action flick. If you thought that The Seeker, The Dark is Rising, not the TV show, but The Seeker, The Dark is Rising, Aragon, or Percy Jackson, The Lightning Thief, were cool, serious sci-fi fantasy action flicks, then you'll enjoy this movie probably and know much of what to expect from I Am Number 4. Although this flick does have decidedly more sexual energy with no relational maturity to go along with it, unfortunately, which makes for a groan-worthy Dawson's Creek combination. The dialogue and characters are two-dimensional stereotypes. People constantly react and say things that just don't make any realistic emotional sense. And yet the tone of the movie isn't playing this up in a comedic sense or by a stylistic choice. It actually seems to want us to buy into this reality and take it seriously. One subplot even includes the resurrection of the popular quarterback and lackeys versus science nerd cliche from 80s coming-of-age flicks. A line in the movie even acknowledges this cliche, saying sarcastically that never gets old. But actually it does, at least as executed here, I think. Pettifer, in the lead role, betrays, I think, his experience with modeling as he rises just above wooden posing for this role. Most other actors do about the same, or at least offer little subtext to their screen time if they're a little more animated and expressive. Pettifer really just seems kind of like he was cast because he's, a pretty boy, he might have more depth to him, but that was not allowed to come out or not properly pulled out, I don't think, in this movie. There are some cool action sequences, to be sure, in this movie, including a few shots not seen in trailers. But if this movie doesn't sound like your style, save your money and just check out the trailers one more time. The best stuff is in there and it's free. And even if you do like the sound of this movie, I would still recommend that if you're strapped for cash, wait for Redbox and watch some Smallville in the meantime. I think it's catering to the same crowd. Very little that might trigger worthwhile discussion after watching this movie, given that the movie itself is so forgettable. But for those who do enjoy the flick, and I don't, down-talk anybody that enjoys it. If this is your cup of tea, that's cool. Hey, one more thing in life you get to enjoy that I don't. But for those who do enjoy the flick, themes of authority figures are present. Like many teens coming of age, John is discovering that he is growing in his capability, in his abilities. Superpowers, of course, in his case, not the norm for teenagers. And yet he's not free to exercise them however he wants, because he still lives under the authority of another who limits his freedom out of a desire to protect him. And this parent figure is portrayed in a positive, loving way. So the movie is not, I don't think, anti-authority in the sense that, say, the first Transformers movie was. There's also an interesting point about love, made more than once, two main times that I can think of in this movie. John's alien species, the Lorians, or the aliens from Lorien, whatever, I don't know what they go by, I can't remember. Anyway, his alien species, unlike humans, it is stated clearly, fall in love only once and remain in love for life. So it was an interesting kind of bar, something to aspire to, and it was also a commentary, I thought, on just recognizing how we are as humans. Today, love has lost much of its meaning, becoming less about commitment and more about transient, feelings that come and go with the freaking wind. So this story point was a welcome divergence from the norm in an otherwise unoriginal film. It was rated PG-13 for intense sequences of violence and action, and for language quality, I give it a 5.5 out of 10, a failing grade. It's not like Batman and Robin or Catwoman bad, but 5.5 is still a failing grade, and relevance, 6.0 out of 10. If you would like to join the Spirit Blade Underground by contributing a review, news, or other geekiness, send a written email or recorded audio file to Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R, at spiritblade.net to get it on this podcast. You can also record your content for me to play on the show by calling 206-350-1226.
Sportos, motorheads, geeks, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Boy, you tell some Christians you can listen to music like that, they will have a cow plop right there on the street in front of you. It's words that Christians just don't say. Oh my God, they don't say, and they don't say, and they really don't say. This Dudecast actually has a disclaimer at the beginning. It's going to piss you off. Make no mistake, getting drunk can be lots of fun. Being drunk is the bad thing. Download the Righteous Dudes Dudecast at righteousdude.podomatic.com.
Righteous! Righteous!
Sit back, relax, and remember, a dude abides.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
Today we're searching for truth in the book of Romans, chapter 7. We're looking at verses 14 through 25. I'm going to read that from the ESV translation now. It says, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am of the flesh, sold under sin. For I do not understand my own actions. For I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Now if I do what I do not want, I agree with the law that it is good. So now it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. Now if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me. So I find it to be a law that when I want to do right, evil lies close at hand. For I delight in the law of God in my inner being, but I see in my members another law waging war against the law of my mind and making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then I myself serve the law of God with my mind, but with my flesh I serve the law of sin." In previous verses, Paul explained how the Old Testament, the Tanakh, the Old Testament law is good, but our sinful tendencies, our flesh, are stimulated by it. It's not that the law is corrupt or flawed, it's the sin within us that reacts to it in a corrupted way. Paul says that the law is pneumatikos, or I think it's actually the pneumatikos. spiritual, meaning it is higher and better than the natural creations of humans. Now, by contrast, Paul says that he is of the flesh, which in the Greek refers to the corrupt tendencies we naturally default to from birth. And we're going to have more on that in a second. Paul even says that he has been sold as a slave under sin. Look at verse 14. "Despite Paul's status as an apostle, a representative of Jesus, this is not the self-portrait of a man who has it all together. Paul lived in constant conflict with his sinful tendencies, often feeling completely mastered by them. Paul couldn't understand the reason for his actions sometimes. He found himself neglecting the things he truly wanted to do and instead doing the things that he hated. Look at verse 15. The fact that he didn't ultimately want to do the sinful things he did was because he knew that the law of God it's good. Look at verse 16. But if that's the case, well, then what's going on here? How can Paul genuinely want to do good but still end up doing evil? How does this happen to any Christian, for that matter, if Christ really lives in them, as is taught in Galatians 2:20 and Romans 8:11? Well, the answer, I think, is in verse 17. Paul says that it is sin, not his actual self, that does evil. We are still responsible for the wrongs we commit as Christians, but they no longer define us. Sin is no longer a part of who a Christian truly is. Instead, sin is only a remnant that hangs on to our new lives in the form of sarks. Sinful nature and flesh, depending on the translation used, it's usually one of those two. Those are both translations of this Greek word, sarks, that falls short of the actual meaning implied. Sarks refers here and in similar contexts to the corrupt, mundane, earthly way of things. It doesn't refer to our physiology, and the sarks of a Christian isn't really their nature either. So both flesh and sin nature are potentially misleading translations, I think. A Christian's sarks, or flesh, as I'll go ahead and opt for right now, is a remnant they have to deal with, but not the substance of who they are. You could compare it to a coating of maple syrup or honey that covers your entire body and dries on your skin. It'd be frustrating. It would affect how others see you and be a constant distraction and obstacle, but it's still not who you are. Now, Paul's sarx was so debilitating that he said he didn't even have the ability to do what is right. Look at verse 18. Instead, Paul had repeating patterns of sin that he struggled against. Look at verse 19. For a second time, Paul identifies the remnant of sin within him as the source of evil, though he doesn't deny personal responsibility. Look at verse 20. Paul noticed a basic law or principle, not to be confused with, you know, the Old Testament law mentioned earlier. He noticed a basic law or principle in his life. When he wanted to do what was right, evil was right on top of him, mucking things up. Look at verse 21. In Paul's true inmost being, he saw God's law for what it is: holy, which means designed and set apart for God's purposes, and good. He enjoyed thinking about it. Can you imagine enjoying thinking about the law? We really don't think of it that way at all. But he saw, as I think I mentioned previously on the podcast, the good things about it. He would have recognized it as being descriptive of God's character, and a way of making our lives better, you know. So he would have taken great joy in it in his inmost being, outside of his sarx, you know. Look at verse 22. But another principle inside him was working against his enjoyment of God's law, just as it does for Christians today, thwarting his good thoughts and dominating his behavior. Look at verse 23. The Apostle Paul, whom we rightly hold in high esteem for his life and teaching, said that he was a wretched man, trapped in a way of living that drove him away from God. And that idea of being driven away from God, we noted earlier, is what's meant by the Greek word used here for death. We've seen that word before. He knew that he desperately needed to be rescued from this condition. Look at verse 24. In mainstream Christian culture, this level of transparency, I think, is pretty rare. We prefer that other people think we are constantly positive, overflowing with joy, and certainly not wrestling with sin on a regular basis. But although he never sinned, Jesus was tempted. Look at Hebrews 4:15. And he was a man of sorrows. So that's said in Isaiah 53, verse 3. And Paul was nearly in despair over his own sinful condition, even after years of being a believer, a respected believer, and a respected teacher. Likewise, we should be willing to acknowledge that sin is an ongoing struggle that often overwhelms us. For me, lately, I've given in to an attitude of entitlement and selfishness on a regular basis. That happens to me more and more when my schedule is getting kind of like, stretched thin, as it has been lately. My sticky sarx has kept me from being generous and selfless with my wife and sons. And so I've been praying that Christ will rescue me from this form of death that's driving me away from God and God's will, this form of death that I've been living in lately. We can look forward to an increasing rescue from sin in this life and a complete rescue from sin in eternity. God made this possible through the work and sacrifice of Jesus. For that, we can be unendingly grateful, even while living with constant internal conflict for now. Look at verse 25. Next week, we're going to take a look at an energizing, life-giving, and truly spiritual way of living. Spiritual is kind of a popular word and expression when talking about religion or beliefs or spirituality or whatever. So we're going to look at a truly life-giving, energizing, spiritual way of living. No, it is not a 12-step program. And the Coffee House question this week: what fictional characters can you think of that struggle with similar internal conflict, like what we've been talking about here? And which do you relate to most? Which character with internal conflict do you relate to most, and why? For me, that's got to be the Iron Giant. He's misunderstood and doesn't want to believe that he is a gun, in his own words. But his nature is that of a destructive weapon, and he loses control and hurts people. He wants to be the good guy. He dreams of being Superman, but he's wired to be a weapon and lives with that conflict inside of him. I weeped like a baby by myself in the theater when I saw this movie, and still can't watch it without tearing up at the end. I think it's just a wonderful picture of just kind of struggling with internal sin and So anyway, so I'd love to get your thoughts. A comic book character, movie character, any characters from fiction that you can think of, and the one that you relate to most because of the internal conflict that they deal with, and why. You can send me your comments at Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R, at spiritblade.net, or give me a call and I'll play your message in the podcast, 206-350-1226, or lastly, strike up some conversation about this at the forums, spiritblade.net/forums, under Seeking Truth. I'd love to hear from you. Well, just a couple of quick notes here to wrap up with. The Pilgrim's Progress Interactive Commentary. I want your comments and questions for the project by March 13th. You can email me, you can send me an audio file you've recorded, or you can call that number, 206-350-1226. And leave your comment or question that way, and you know I'm extending the deadline for the first half of as well. Originally, I said the first half by February 13th, and comments on the second half by March 13th. I'm gonna just go ahead and overlap and extend the first half as well, so everybody has a chance to participate and just talk about whatever you want to talk about. So the whole project, give me your thoughts, questions, comments, whatever, send them my way by March 13th in order to get them included in the interactive audio commentary. Also, mark your calendar for Saturday, March 26th at 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. That's when we're having the live chat for Pilgrim's Progress Similitude of a Dream. It's a free event, and I'll give you more details as we get closer, but mark your calendar for now, March 26th at 6 p.m. MST. And if you're interested in getting the Spirit Blade Enhanced Audiobook entirely for free, the power is in your hands. Go to spiritblade.net/audiobook for details. I've gotten a few responses so far, but not all of the suggestions have been properly tested by the criteria that I laid out. All the rules and information can be found at spiritblade.net/audiobook. I've gotten at least two suggestions so far that are viable. The others remain untested and unconfirmed. So the event continues, and the free release of the audiobook remains on hold and yet in your hands. I need seven suggestions in total that have been tested by the criteria at spiritblade.net/audiobook. So don't just recklessly say, hey, have you thought of this or this? Gotta check the criteria and check out for yourself. Make sure it's going to work and assure me that it will. Because I'm busy releasing other kinds of content, stuff that I want to get to you guys. So I'm leaving this one in your hands. It's up to you when you want to get it. There's just five more suggestions to go. Two down, five to go. So for participation and info, also on the bonus prize involved for the best suggestion, go to spiritblade.net/audiobook. No podcast next week. I'm going to be out for the weekend starting Friday morning and won't be able to release the podcast early this coming week. But in 2 weeks, I hope to have a review of one or more of the movies coming out next weekend. Driving Angry and Shelter, I think, have both piqued my interest. I'm interested in checking them out. So I'm going to try and see those the next weekend, even while I'm out and about. And hopefully I'll have reviews for both of those on the next podcast. But you can catch them early. I'll post them earlier as soon as I've written the reviews for them at spiritblade.net/Pater, P-A-E-T-E-R. It's how you spell my name. So anyway, that's it. Have a great week, you guys, and let's do what we can, you and I, and all the mundane. It's easy to forget, isn't it? It's easy to just kind of go through our normal routines and not stay sharp and just kind of like go on autopilot, but let's challenge ourselves, you and I, this week, in everything we do to seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Pater is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.